If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
President Trump also said today that he thinks former Vice President Joe Biden will get the Democratic nomination, but will, quote, limp across the finish line. As opposed to Trump, who only limps when he's asked about Vietnam.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth talks to filmmaker Michael Moore. Moore also sticks around for a few more questions exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look at last night's Democratic debate.
Tonight was the first round of the second series of Democratic presidential debates. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Of course, just because it was the Democrats' big night doesn't mean Donald Trump could stay out of the news. In fact, he's physically incapable of it. I'm shocked he didn't crash through the wall of the debate stage in his golf cart. Trump, as usual, spent the morning screaming at the TV all day on Twitter, ranting about everything from his racist attacks on Baltimore to trade to morning talk shows to a possible infrastructure bill, tweeting, "Do I hear the beautiful word bipartisan?" I don't know. Do you? Let's listen.
In a few moments, I will sign a bipartisan bill.
Of course, a bipartisan is someone who only votes while drunk. Okay, now how do I get out of this booth? Also, how do you mess up the word bipartisan? It's like the most popular word in politics. That's like messing up the word Congress or lawmakers.
Lawmakers.
All right. Trump was also asked today if his racist attacks on Congressman Elijah Cummings in Baltimore were part of some sort of calculated political strategy, which is both clearly not true and also doesn't matter. It's just who Trump is. He's a racist. It's how he sees the world. And when he was asked today if it was some sort of grand strategy, he said this.
There's no strategy. I have no strategy. There's zero strategy.
That would be an accurate Trump response to literally any question. Mr. Trump, when you stand up straight, are you intentionally puffing your chest out like an angry kangaroo?
I have no strategy. I stand like this because my bones are hollowed out from the Diet Coke.
In fact, today was a day of seemingly accidental confessions from Trump because he was also asked by reporters about a bipartisan election security bill that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is blocking. Trump tried to defend McConnell from accusations that he's essentially aiding Russia, but I don't think Trump's comment was helpful.
Mitch McConnell is a man that knows less about Russia and Russian influence than even Donald Trump. And I know nothing.
I agree. I mean, this is a crazy day. And again, an answer that could work for literally any question. After his presidency is over and they haul him in on obstruction of justice charges, he's going to be sitting in an interrogation room telling the cops, "It was all Mike Pence's idea."
I know nothing.
All of this is why, whatever you think of the Democrats, it was a relief and a change of pace to at least hear a bunch of people who can speak in coherent sentences about actual policies. The only time Elizabeth Warren's ever been a bipartisan is when she drank a beer that one time on Instagram Live. Now, Warren was one of the leading contenders coming into tonight's debate, along with her close ideological ally and longtime friend Bernie Sanders. And coming into the debate tonight, there were a lot of questions about how they'd handle their friendship. The media couldn't help but speculate. Would they go after each other, or would they team up to go after the moderates on stage?
Tonight, the frontrunners in the center of the stage are going to be Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And one of the big questions is, their political allies, will they go after each other?
They kind of seem to have a pact that they won't go after each other. Does that pact live through the evening?
They are seen as competing for some of the same voters. So does she try to create some differentiation with Senator Sanders, or does she focus on Joe Biden, or do a different thing?
I think Sanders and Warren are more likely to team up against some of the more moderate candidates on stage.
That's right. They should team up like a wrestling duo. Warren could start by giving a lengthy explanation for her plan for a wealth tax on assets over $50 million, and then Bernie could tag in and hit a billionaire over the head with a chair. And then there was the rest of the field. Everyone was looking for their moment to stand out, and there were big questions for each of them. Questions like, who the hell are these guys? Would Beto bust out his Spanish again? And since Cory Booker wasn't on stage, would he make this face at home? Would Tim Ryan get caught touring the debate stage again, looking like a pledge from Sigma Chi? And would Marianne Williamson explode into 1,000 butterflies that spell out the word love? And then once the debate got started, CNN chose to have the candidates come on stage individually for intros, like they were the original Star Trek cast at Comic-Con. And while some candidates obviously had big fan bases, others got more muted reactions.
Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator Elizabeth Warren. Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Former Congressman John Delaney.
Oh, man, what a bummer for that guy to have to follow Warren, Buttigieg, and Bernie. It's like if Springsteen, Bono, and the Rolling Stones all opened a concert, and then they were followed by a Weezer cover band. Hey, how you guys doing tonight? Hey, one more time for Mick Jagger. CNN spent what seemed like an eternity going through the rigmarole of all the intros, the color guard, the national anthem, and then after all that, Elizabeth Warren returned the opening kickoff for a 99-yard touchdown. And then there was still more because they also had opening statements. We didn't even get to our first question until about 25 minutes in. You could have just watched an entire episode of Veep. In fact, I'm pretty sure anyone on Veep would have had a better chance of getting elected than this guy. I mean, what is this guy doing here? And where's Gromit? Of course, we did get the benefit of an opening statement from Marianne Williamson, who right off the bat made it weird with her word choice.
In 1776, our founders brought forth on this planet an extraordinary new possibility.
On this planet?
To be clear, on the planet I'm from, you can only vote if you've gathered enough moon crystals to please the ancient oracle.
And then the Democrats immediately got into it, with the moderators asking Bernie to respond to former Congressman John Delaney's criticisms of his Medicare for All plan.
You support Medicare for All, which would eventually take private health insurance away from more than 150 million Americans in exchange for government-sponsored health care for everyone. Congressman Delaney just referred to it as bad policy, and previously he has called the idea political suicide that will just get President Trump reelected. What do you say to Congressman Delaney?
You're wrong.
Such a quick answer. Bernie said that like he's definitely used those words before. Sir, you ordered the lobster bisque. You're wrong. I ordered the chicken soup, and I want those crackers. Crackers for all. And then, after Delaney and others accused Bernie and Warren of trying to make private health insurance illegal, Warren stepped in to stop the bickering.
Let's be clear about this. We are the Democrats. We are not about trying to take away health care from anyone. That's what the Republicans are trying to do. And we should stop using Republican talking points in order to talk with each other about how to best provide that health care.
Elizabeth Warren will turn this car around right now, and nobody's going to Disneyland. Bernie and Warren had standout moments, and Bernie seemed especially feisty early on. He was shouting over the moderators when they interrupted him. taking on the moderates like Delaney and landing a big blow against Congressman Tim Ryan.
Senator Warren, it's your turn.
Oh, can I complete that, please?
Your time is up, 30 seconds.
They will be advertising tonight with that talking point. Under Medicare for All, the hospitals will save substantial sums of money because they're not going to be spending a fortune doing billing and the other bureaucratic things that they have to do today.
I've done
second
the math,
of all,
it doesn't add up.
Maybe you did that and made money off of health care, but our job is to run a nonprofit health care system. Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all health care needs for senior citizens. It will finally include dental care, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
But you don't know
second
that.
Of all.
You don't know that,
second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second,
I do know when I wrote the damn bill.
Damn. Tim Ryan better hope Medicare for All passes because he's going to need some health care for that burn. Bernie scared him so bad, Ryan turned white as a sheet 40 years ago. Tim Ryan got owned so hard, his hat flew back onto his head. You know Bernie was waiting for that moment to be challenged on a bill you wrote is a politician's dream. It's like if J.K. Rowling was on Jeopardy and one of the categories was boy wizards. But it seemed like all the moderates wanted a shot at Warren or Bernie tonight. At one point, they debated the question of whether a self-described democratic socialist like Bernie could take on Trump. And former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper even tried to mock Bernie's mannerisms, which only encouraged Bernie.
So, again, I think if we're going to force Americans to make these radical changes, they're not going to go along. You throw your hands up. But you haven't... Oh, I can do it.
I feel like that's... The first and only time John Hickenlooper has said, throw your hands up! And don't challenge Bernie to pull a Bernie. Oh, and let me guess, you're gonna do that thing with your finger. Okay, I will do it, and I'm gonna point it right at you! And then when the moderates kept challenging Warren on her plans, claiming her ideas were either impossible or politically impractical, she delivered what seemed like a thesis statement for her candidacy and for the night.
You know, I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of running for president if all your positions are about stuff you can't do? It's like if Ronald Reagan had said, Mr. Gorbachev, make this wall a little shorter. Yeah. One of the flashpoints in this divide between the progressives and the moderates was the climate crisis. The candidates disagreed over ambitious proposals like the Green New Deal, and again, Ryan tried to take on Bernie.
What do you do with an industry that knowingly, for billions of dollars in short-term profits, is destroying this planet? I say that is criminal
Thank
activity.
You.
That cannot be allowed
Thank
to continue.
Thank you, Senator Sanders. Congressman, your response.
Well, yeah, I would just say, I didn't say we couldn't get there till 2040, Bernie. You don't have to yell.
Oh, no, he absolutely does have to yell. Bernie's been kicked out of every library in Vermont. He's like the bus from Speed. If he goes under 100 decibels, his hair will explode. This debate basically seemed like a bunch of moderates trying to take on Warren and Bernie, and Warren and Bernie teaming up to fend them off. It was like watching Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen take on the Washington Generals. In fact, at one point, John Delaney was again called on to debate Warren over her proposal to impose a wealth tax on assets over $50 million, and she managed to debate Delaney just with her facial expressions.
We can raise the capital gains rate to match the ordinary income. You know the last president to do that was actually Ronald Reagan. We can do that in our first year. I've called for that to be done, and it'll double the earned income tax credit. I've called for the expansion of universal pre-K so that every American has pre-K.
Damn. Even when she's not talking, she's winning. It's like when you're on the subway next to a crazy guy and you try to signal your friend you want to move without talking. Also, look at how she rubs her hands when the wealth tax comes up.
Your estimated net worth is more than $65 million. That would make you subject to Senator Warren's proposed wealth tax on the assets of the richest 75,000 homes, households, or so in the United States.
I mean, she was like J.K. Rowling if the final Jeopardy category was boy wizards. And then, of course, there was Marianne Williamson again, who gave this answer on the Flint water crisis.
Flint is just the tip of the iceberg.
I was recently in Denmark, South Carolina, where there is a lot of talk about it being the next Flint. We have an administration that has gutted the Clean Water Act. We have communities, particularly communities of color and disadvantaged communities all over this country, who are suffering from environmental injustice. I assure you, I lived in Grosse Pointe. What happened in Flint would not have happened in Grosse Pointe. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society.
Wait, was that good? Is Marianne Williamson like one of those albums you have to listen to a couple of times before you figure out what they were trying to do? Is Marianne Williamson jazz? Let's hear some more.
You can't fight dog whistles. You have to override them. And the only way you can override them is with new voices, voices of energy that only come from the fact that America has been willing to live up to our own mistakes, atone for our own mistakes, make amends for our own mistakes, love each other, love our democracy, love future generations.
Okay, I think I'm gonna put this album away. Couple things that were a little odd about how this debate was conducted. For one thing, they kept giving so much time to John Delaney, a guy who's polling at less than 1%.
Congressman Delaney, Congressman Delaney, Congressman Delaney, Congressman Delaney, your response.
Congressman Delaney, I'll start with you.
Congressman Delaney, your response. Congressman Delaney. Congressman Delaney, I'm coming to you now.
Why do they keep asking him to chime in? He's polling within the margin of error. He's not gonna win. It's like going to a Maroon 5 concert if Adam Levine kept going, all right, now time for another drum solo. And Delaney wasn't the only also-ran who got more stage time than he probably should have. There was also Tim Ryan, who for some reason always seems surprised when they toss him a question.
I want to go to Congressman Ryan, and I want to turn to the subject of North Korea.
I mean, my goodness, he looks like a long-haul trucker desperately fighting to stay away.
130 miles to Tulsa. Maybe if I take off one shoe.
Ultimately, this was a deeply substantive debate that showcased genuine differences among the candidates on key policy questions. And no matter what you think of any of them, eventually, one of them's gonna go up against a guy whose campaign slogan is basically,
I know nothing.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest tonight is the Academy Award-winning filmmaker of documentaries like Roger and Me, Bowling for Columbine, and Fahrenheit 9/11. He is the founder of the Traverse City Film Festival, which runs from July 30th to August 4th. Please welcome back to the show, Michael Moore, everybody. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm here finally on a show when Fred is here.
That's true. You have not overlapped.
It's great.
It's a nice it's a nice reward for your continued kindness to us and continuing to come back.
This show is kind to America.
Oh, that's very
nice. The fact that you do this every night and speak the truth.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
In ways that should have you hauled out of here one of these days.
Well, so, hanging on as long as I can. You spoke a little truth yesterday to moderate Dems who you were critical of putting too much of their faith in the Mueller report being their, him being their savior.
Yes.
And you wrote that a frail old man, unable to remember things, stumbling, refusing to answer basic questions. I said it in 2017, and Mueller confirmed it today, this was a mistake. And you got a retweet from someone who agreed with you on this. Donald Trump retweeted you.
Yes, yes!
Now, obviously, you have been very vocal about him. He's been very vocal about you. How does it feel when Donald Trump agrees with you?
But he's always, actually, his tweets at me are actually, he's afraid, I think. He never attacks in the way. I did get a nickname from him.
Yep.
There's 200 of us. I don't know if you're in the club, but
yeah,
you have a nickname from him?
He's said third rate about me.
Third rate.
Yeah, yeah.
Third rate Seth.
Well, I haven't gotten a Seth. I've had marbles in my mouth that was said about me.
I've got Sloppy Mike.
Sloppy Mike.
Sloppy yeah. Mike, yeah. I think he's a little afraid to come completely at me because essentially I'm his base.
Right.
I'm an angry white guy over the age of 50, and I have a high school education.
Yeah. Right.
So you don't want to go at me. You don't want to go at me too hard.
Right.
So it's actually, but I so enjoy it when he does. And I tweeted him back, About the part about we were watching a frail old man yesterday. I just said, Donald, I was actually talking about you.
Despite everything that happened yesterday, you still do believe that impeachment is the right path.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with the Democrats. You have to, for history's sake, for the children, you have to say, this is wrong. Presidents cannot break the law.
So ultimately,
and it has to be said. And yes, I know what everybody says is, well, yeah, but the Senate doesn't impeach. Impeach is only done by the House, and it means that your behavior has caused us to impeach you, and now we'll send you to the Senate for trial. But you don't say don't do it because there won't be a trial in the Senate, as we know. The Detroit Tigers do not say, well, I don't want to go to New York and play the Yankees. We're just going to lose, you know?
Right.
No, let's not do impeachment because we'll lose in the Senate, and we're Democrats, and our feelings get hurt. And no, we need to fight. We have to fight, 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 you know? I'm serious. This is serious. Next year, you people realize we could, I think actually, whoever the Democratic candidate is, will get 2 million more votes than Hillary's 3 million that she beat him with. I think we'll get 5 million next year, and we could still lose the Electoral College.
Right.
This is a very, very serious thing, and so we have to do some things to make sure that we have the right candidate. We have to have a beloved American running, not a professional politician. We have to have somebody that if you put up a professional politician against Trump, you've got to have somebody that's going to inspire the base. The base here of the Democratic Party are women, people of color, and young adults between 18 and 35. That's 70% of who's going to vote next year.
Right.
70% of the electorate is what I just described. But you've got to come up with a candidate to where when people wake up on election morning next year, and they've got to have that sense that if you voted in 08 or 12 for Obama, do you remember how that feeling that morning? You couldn't wait to get to the polls. It was like, I can't believe we're going to do this today. Who are you going to say that about of the 25 that are running right now? When you wake up a year from November, I can't wait to get to the polls so I can vote for John Hickenlooper or Joe Biden. Joe Biden. I love Joe Biden.
Yeah, I love Joe Biden,
but,
too. You know what that is? Well, again, I want to
ask. We
got
to win.
But I think a lot of, I can understand as well. I understand this thought process, which is, you know, now, you know, going into 2016, I think a lot of people, you were not this kind of person. You thought Trump was going to win. You called it state by state. I think a lot of people, I will admit to it, I didn't think he could win. So now I see in this year, I can understand that people are like, just give me the safest candidate. Do you think that is, but you think that's a huge mistake?
No, it's the hugest mistake. You don't want safe right now. You've got to fight Trump with whatever our version of, he's a street fighter. We need a street fighter. That's the only way you're going to defeat him. You're going up against a bully.
Do you see street fighters in the, how many street fighters, don't name names, but how many out of the 25 do you see as street fighters?
Two.
Okay.
Two of the 25.
You can say if
you look, Bernie. I think if Bernie were here right now, he could take on Fred. I mean, I think he would actually.
Really? Do you want to talk about strategy? Because
again,
you called this last time. And talk about what happened in Michigan in 2018.
Last November, Michigan sadly went red for Trump in 2016. But this past November, we brought it back to blue. And we kicked out all the Republicans in the state capitol. And we got the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, secretary of state. And we kicked out two Republicans, congressmen, in suburban Detroit, and replaced them with two Democratic women. So Michigan is now back. Let me tell you how we did it. Here's how we did it. And we got to do this in states, especially the swing states, next year. Ballot proposals brought out the people to vote last November who may not have voted. So we came up with this idea. Let's get two ballot proposals. Actually, this is Karl Rove's and Bush's idea. In 2004, they got 14 states to put an amendment on the ballot proposal to ban gay marriage. And it passed in all 14 states, and it brought out enough people to get Bush elected. We can do this time. If we put ballot measures on the ballots, we did it in Michigan with marijuana legalization, we doubled the youth vote from the previous off-year election. And the African-American vote, which a lot of thousands had sat it out in 16, unhappy with the choices, came back to vote last November because we had a ballot proposal to make gerrymandering and voter suppression illegal. And it passed. It passed. Marijuana passed. And we had a huge African-American turnout. And that gave us Democrats. We got Democrats elected off it. So instead of putting all our hopes in one politician to carry the thing, we have to get these ballot proposals on in the swing states. That will bring out people to vote. Now, I tweeted at Trump just before I came out to watch tonight.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, because I was going to tell him, you know, he is my brother's wife. I told him to get a bucket of KFC.
Yep.
And he's in his robe right now watching you and I.
Probably, yep.
And I said, we gotta watch because I'm gonna tell you how we're gonna remove you from the White House next year.
All right.
And we're gonna do it by getting those ballot proposals in those states to bring out the majority of Americans, who are that 70%, women, people of color, young adults. We're going to run a beloved candidate who is a street fighter. All right? I'm serious. We have, folks, if we put up the wrong horse in this race, we are doomed again. Let's not do that. And I'm willing to say, okay, so let's say, I mean, obviously I love Bernie and his politics and all that, but we all have to agree, we're going to all vote for the person that isn't just going to beat Trump, because I think there's four or five candidates now that could beat him. But beating isn't good enough. Hillary beat him. Mm-hmm. We have to crush Trump. It has to be Orange Crush. Orange Crush. Operation Orange Crush. I just came up with that.
There you go. Well, you got to come back again. We'll check in on the operation. That's Michael Moore, everybody.
All right, there
Traverse
we go.
City Film Festival, July 30th, August 4th. We'll be right back with more 2 Chainz.
Hey, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Michael Moore.
We're backstage. Where are we, actually?
The green room.
We're in my dressing room.
Yeah. This is the first time I think we've done the podcast without walking somewhere. We went to your Broadway show once. We went to go mail you in your absentee ballot.
Yeah. I only do podcasts when I'm burning calories. So this feels very unusual to me.
This is so boring. But I want to ask you, you and Seth were just talking about Michigan. You're from Michigan. You live in Michigan. You have the Traverse City Film Festival, which is coming up next week. How did that kick off?
Well, I moved up to Traverse City, mm-hmm. Which is about 300 miles north of Detroit. Mm-hmm. And it's great up there. It's beautiful, the woods, the lakes. But once I got there, there were no movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was one multiplex that, showed the typical fare that a cinema shows. But I realized I was not going to be able to see any foreign films, independent films, documentaries. Mm-hmm. I'd have to drive to Ann Arbor, which is another 300 miles. So I just started thinking, well, maybe I should just start a film festival here. I must not be the only person that wants to see something other than Transformers 16. So,
which was great.
Yes, but not as good as 17.
No, 17 was with the twist.
17 was, it was with a twist and it had the twins.
The twins.
The scary twins.
Yeah, who transformed into other twins.
Yeah, yes. And then there were quadruplets because when the twins each had all spawned their own machines.
That was wild, right? And they kept multiplying. And then now the twins have franchises.
Yes.
And it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So those are not the movies you're showing.
No. No, I show really good stuff from all over the world.
Yeah.
And I show good American stuff, too, because there's a lot of great movies. The best movie I've seen this year, I would say, is something called Booksmart.
Love Booksmart.
Oh, you saw it?
Oh, yeah. It's excellent.
It's excellent.
It's really good.
It's I tell everybody, you've got to go see this movie because, people
Beanie's been here. Olivia Wilde's been here.
Yeah, yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah, film. So Olivia Wilde is an actress, and I've known her and her parents since she was a baby.
Her parents are in politics, right?
Yeah, yeah. They've been journalists for a long time. And then her mother, Leslie, ran for Congress last year.
Right, in Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is her first film that she's directed. And it's just very smart and funny.
Yeah, it's really funny.
And different. There's been some good movies this summer, and I noticed people just aren't going. And
I really loved Booksmart, yeah.
Yeah, why that is. So I look for films like that. The opening night movie is called Brittany Runs a Marathon, which is essentially what the movie is, except it's funny and sweet and sad and
powerful and all those other things that good movies are.
Yeah. What first drew you to filmmaking?
I always loved the movies. I went to a lot of movies when I was a kid. We had a movie theater in our neighborhood. Back then, the movies changed two or three times a week. So I would just go there. Mm. It was, you know, I don't know, 50 cents to go to the movies. And I saw everything. And then I started doing that as a teenager. And as soon as I had a driver's license, I would drive to Ann Arbor, Detroit, where I could really see the movies that they were showing in New York or LA or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and then one day I thought I could make one, even though I hadn't gone to film school and I didn't know how to make a movie, but uh-huh. I thought I'd seen enough movies.
It can't be that hard.
Well, if you watched enough crocheting, like hours and hours of crocheting, night after night, month after month, year after year, you could probably crochet something.
Hmm. Okay.
You don't believe that?
I don't believe it.
Well, then I don't know how.
Maybe most people.
I don't know how I figured out how to make a movie, but.
How was the first film?
The first film I made? Or the first
was
film
it Roger
I saw?
And Me?
It was Roger Me. How was Roger Me?
That was your first time out of the gate.
That's the first time I ever did anything. Yeah.
I assumed there was at least something before Roger and Me.
Yeah, like Quentin Tarantino had that short, something about what I did on my birthday, or I don't know what it. You know, Spike did two films before Do the Right Thing.
Because when you say, you would, if someone were to ask me what's Michael Moore's first film, I would have said Roger Me. But I would have figured, like, not really Roger Me. There's like a student film. There's something before it.
No, that was it. That was it. I didn't know what I was doing. But I had this attitude that wasn't appreciated when I was in school, which is I always thought making a mistake was a good idea because it was a great teacher, you know, that I would learn from these mistakes.
You learn much more from your mistakes than your successes.
Yeah. But why don't we tell our kids that?
Totally. We don't. Yeah.
Instead of making them feel lousy.
Right.
Because they messed up or they got a bad grade or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. just say, okay, the key to when you make a mistake is not to make it again.
Right.
So if you got a D, yeah. Okay, you're allowed the D. Don't get another D, though.
That's right.
Life will suck for you with a lot of Ds.
Yeah.
I always made sure I learned from my mistakes, and I did that as a filmmaker. I think with Roger and Me, for every 10 rolls of film that I shot, maybe one or two were usable.
Did that ratio change over the years?
It's funny because now it's digital, so there's no way to compare it.
Yeah.
Because with digital, you can just keep shooting forever.
Forever, right.
Whereas with 16mm film, it costs me $400
every
10 minutes.
Yeah. Wow.
To buy the film, to process it, to do the sound, it was $400.
Wow.
So I had no money. You know, I mean, I made that first film I was broke. I was on unemployment.
That's a great teacher, too. Just the financial aspect of making a mistake is pretty
well,
serious.
Well, it makes you an editor in the field because you don't have the money to shoot a whole lot. But if you really put some thought in advance into what you're going to film in the edit room, it's so much better because you just weren't willy-nilly. Just put that, we got it willy-nilly. And yeah, we keep a list of all these old. Okay, so for people listening.
Yeah, explain this.
When I come on the show, you don't remember, if you remember Pee-wee's Playhouse,
mm-hmm.
There was always like a secret word. And they would wait for where somebody would use the word and then the thing would come down, the bells would go off or whatever. So I always have a secret word I try to work into the interview.
And this is on all different types of interviews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I do it on serious interviews.
Yeah.
I've done it with Ted Koppel. He didn't know I was doing it. But usually, like back in the green room here, we're all sitting in here. Okay, what's the word? And before I went out with Ted Koppel, he said, you got to say the word dude to Ted Koppel. This is on a serious Nightline show, right? And I'm like, how am I going to work dude in? But I figured out a way to do it. But that's
how did you do it?
He had me on because the auto workers were on strike. Mm-hmm. And he said, what are the issues? You know, why are they out on strike? And I said, well, you know, you work hard all day and it's like you come home and you go, dude, you know, what do I got to show for this?
Very smooth.
Yeah, because I couldn't call Ted Koppel dude.
No one's ever called Ted Koppel dude.
No, that wasn't going to work. You know what we used to do? We have LexisNexis. I don't know if people know what that is, but it's like a hyper Google.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a great way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah, before there was Google. So like everything that was published in a newspaper magazine was recorded in LexisNexis and you could go online. So we would type in the word I was going to use, like dude, to see if it had ever been used on Nightline before. That was the key. And so if like, when I come on Seth Meyers tonight, so our word tonight mm-hmm. was kerfuffle.
We didn't get there.
And I'm going to guess no one has used the word kerfuffle on Late Night with Seth Meyers.
I cannot think of an instance where it was said.
Yeah.
But we're going to have our researchers on that.
Okay. And when we looked into the camera at Trump
mm-hmm.
watching us with his bucket of KFC, what are your odds that Trump was actually watching this?
Very low.
Are you kidding me? You're so wrong.
You think he's watching?
Because I put it to him on Twitter.
Maybe because you did put it on Twitter.
And I didn't put his handle.
So all he does is that.
I just figure because he's probably watching Fox. But we're on pretty late, so maybe it's the prime time's done. So maybe there's a good chance he was watching tonight.
Fox, he's already watched at 12:30. Fox is in reruns. He's already watched it in prime time.
So maybe he was watching tonight.
He is.
We'll find out tomorrow on Twitter.
He's watching because we got to get Seth a better nickname. You know,
right?
Third rate Seth is too hard to pronounce.
I'm sure Trump will find it.
It's in there, you know.
It's
third rate Seth. That's not right. It's not right. It's not fair to any of us to have to pronounce that. By the way, how do you spell Myers?
M-E-Y-E-R-S.
See, that's my only fear, that Trump's not watching, that I misspelled
Myers
in my tweet.
Yeah.
And so he can't find the show. Because I don't think Trump is.
Right.
No, he's all about the spelling.
He's never
put, and the grammar.
That's his thing.
And the literature.
And the caps lock.
I went to the first time when he went to all caps and he couldn't figure out how to get the lock off. How many times did people have to come in? You know, he probably thinks he needs a screwdriver or something. We're going to miss him though, aren't we?
No.
A little bit. Trump? No, not at all.
No.
Good.
Zero. Yeah.
Right, because he's out of here.
Yeah. We'll
November 3rd, 11 p.m., 2020. November 3rd.
When the West Coast closes?
Yes, we'll be able to say it across the country, but only if the people listening to this right now get off their butts.
Yeah.
And get involved and get the turnout out there.
Well, people got to get involved, got to vote, as you were saying.
And we got to get the right candidates.
And the right candidates.
And the other thing, next time I come on,
please.
I want to encourage people in their states to run for state house and state
senate.
Totally.
It really matters.
Because the people elected next year will do the drawing of the district maps.
Hugely impactful, hugely important.
Yes. And this is where the gerrymandering occurs, where they draw districts to lessen the power, mostly of Black and Latino voters. Mm-hmm. And so we got to get people in our state houses and state senates after 2020. It's very important.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk about it, please. It's important.
I will come back, and thank you for having me here.
Thanks for being here.
And
thanks for doing the podcast, the stationary podcast.
And you have, actually, it's a wonderful, you can't see it here on the podcast, but it's a wonderful green room.
It's nice, right?
It's nice. I see my friends that I brought have eaten, actually, they've eaten most of the healthy stuff.
Yeah, I say that the chips and the popcorn are, and the candy is full.
The candy bowl is full, but the fruit is half gone.
That's a good sign.
So that's a good sign.
That's great.
I only travel with healthy people.
Health nuts.
Yes.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.